Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke.
And today we're going to talk about seeds and seed savings, or why am I growing paranoid?
Wow, that must be a new drug or something.
I don't know. I'm growing something, but actually,
a beard.
I'm not growing. growing older. Okay, so let's talk about the need to save seeds.
All right, try to be serious, Jay. Come on.
All right. This is really your field. I'm not the gardener. I'm not the animal care person. That's you, Miss Mother Nature. So tell us why we should be saving seeds.
Well, let me say before we start that there are a couple of resources that people can go to if they want to follow up afterwards, and I don't want to forget that. But one that I really like is seedsavers.org, and they're a great organization. They've been around a long time, and they get it right. And then, of course, BlueRockStation.com. We have a natural gardening booklet and a PDF form that people can access there for a small fee that talks about companion planting and seeds and all kinds of cool stuff. And there's lots of resources online. But the reality is the reason that we want to save seeds is because, for me, it's an act of revolution. We need to have access to lots of different kinds of seeds because we are destroying them at such a fast pace. And the likes of Monsanto and DuPont and Syngenta are gobbling up seed banks and seeds.
Right. We'll talk about the evil empire here in a bit.
All right. Know. So the reason that we really want to save seeds is it gives us a lot of access to be able to grow things. Seeds are life. You take a seed and you hold it in your hand, and it's pretty exciting because it holds DNA, it holds the past, it holds the future.
Well, I know when we were watching this movie, Seeds.
The Untold Story.
It's a great film, by
the way.
It's one of those, though, that, you know, the deeper it goes into this whole issue around seeds and seed savings and the evilness of the large corporations that are sort of taking over that, you know, it sort of drifts you down into this sense of hopelessness. But I think hopefully what we're going to talk about here today is that you can take control of a bit of this. You can, seeds are by their very nature, it's something you can harvest, hold back, and then plant again.
Well, the right seeds.
Again.
The right seeds.
And that's something we're. But I was surprised, and I think it was in that movie or maybe a different movie where it talked about how 94% of all the different plant species have been lost. And we were debating this, whether it's 20 years or 50 years.
Yeah,
either way, it's like in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So that's kind of amazing that 94% of all the different life forms, plant life forms, are just vamanos, gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and part of the problem, too, is that we're down to eating about 10 different plants. And when there are so many other choices, but corporations have brought us to this, and mm-hmm. also lifestyle has brought us to these 10 plants. And so what we have to do, though, if we want to save seeds, is we have to know what kind of seeds that we're going to save. And by that, I mean, are we going to save heirloom seeds or are we going to save hybrid seeds? And we don't want to save hybrid seeds because if it's been modified in some way, they've taken different strong points from DNA from other types of seeds, and they brought it into that seed to try to make it more determinant, as they call it. That's the term. So non-determinant would be heirloom. So we don't know how long the vine's going to get. It might be longer this year or shorter. It might be bigger. It might be smaller. It's not consistently the same, but that's a good thing. The hybrid seed is going to consistently produce, if the circumstances are right, the soil's right, and the pH level's right in the soil, is going to produce the same thing every single time unless you save the seed. And then if you try to regrow that from the seed, that plant, it's going to bring out other qualities, like maybe it'll be a different color or even a different taste because it's got these strong other pieces of DNA.
Like the recessive genes.
Yes, recessive genes.
Well, is there a difference between genetically modified and hybrid? I mean, it seems to me there should be.
Yeah, there is. Genetically modified means that they've brought in something totally unrelated to that seed. So maybe they took some pig DNA and injected it into that plant or that seed. And so now it has pig DNA. And I don't think it can grow back to being a pig. But no, we don't want to ever use GMO seeds. Nature doesn't like that.
And of course, the deeper you explore into GMO, it gets really, I'm almost Frankensteinish,
yeah,
if that's a word, where they take these weird, it's almost like these scientists are going, I wonder what'll happen if we take an octopus and we cross it with a cucumber, you know, what are we going to get?
And no, nothing in nature would do that naturally. And so it's totally unnatural. Well, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so what we want are heirloom seeds. And heirloom seeds are often seeds that have been saved and passed on from one generation for thousands of years even. And that's exciting to think about, that we can grow foods today that our ancestors for many generations back grew. And that's what we really need to be doing. And it is an act of revolution because there are so many things that have been put in place to stop us from saving seeds and collecting seeds. And it's almost a no-brainer process to do it. And if you don't want to learn from this podcast, you can go online to YouTube or just about any place and you can learn simple ways to save seeds. It's a great thing to do. So
when you say that things have come into place to keep you from saving seeds, I found it interesting when we're looking at this that in recent years, there have been a number of court cases that have led to this weird, crazy situation we're in today, where companies can actually patent life forms.
Yeah.
You know, and not only life forms, they can patent the seed, they can patent the plant, but they end up holding the patent on every offspring that comes forever and ever, amen, into the
right.
future. And really, this has just started in say, 1981 in a court case called Diamond versus Chakravarti. And that was where this Chakravarti was a biologist, I guess, who developed a bacteria that could eat oil spills and ended up patenting that. And the Supreme Court said, yep, okay, it's okay to patent life. Although the original patent law written by Thomas Jefferson pretty much specifically said no
right.
you can't patent life.
That's
but
right.
But in our world of corporations, we can now patent life, and not only life, but all the babies that come beyond. That reminds me of something that used to exist, maybe still does exist. Seems to me we fought a civil war about that somewhere. But
yeah, mm-hmm. Good point.
Yep.
That's a good point, Jay.
Uh-huh.
Thank you for that. That's touching. Well, so let's move past trying to patent life forms, because we don't want to be in that business, and that has absolutely everything that we don't believe in involved in it. We want to look at being sustainable in our practices. And being sustainable then means that we're going to look for heirloom or what they call open pollinated seeds. And by that is that open pollinated seed, it has distinct characteristics as long as it's mated with an individual of the same breed. So like being like. And that's pretty important. So those seeds come in a lot of varieties, annual, biannual, perennial. So annual seeds mean that annually you're going to have to plant again. Biannual means the first year the plant sets its plant and its roots, and the second year it sets its seed, and then it dies. And perennial means it goes on and on and on, unless something happens, it's too wet or too dry or whatever. So it doesn't matter. It's in terms of annual, biannual, perennial. It just needs to be open pollinated or heirloom. So some examples would be annuals could be lettuce, tomatoes, peppers, and those are all easy things to save seed from. Biannuals could be carrots, onions, root crops, cabbage, parsley, Brussels sprouts. And then perennials are things like apple trees and asparagus some kinds of bulbs that can just keep coming back. But the point is, there's huge variety out there.
Well, our apple trees never seem to actually be perennial.
We have one that came from seed that got thrown out with the dish detergent, which everybody said couldn't happen. Mm-hmm. That's right. And it has early harvest apples on it that fall on your head when you come out the back door. So anyway, the thing for me is this is all pretty exciting to think about. You have this tiny seed you hold in your hand that holds life. You put it in the right kind of soil and sometimes not even the right kind of soil, and it produces an amazing product, a plant that you can eat the leaves of or the roots or all the plant, and it gives you life in return. And that may sound sort of romantic, but I think that's the process of life. Okay. The one thing that you want to consider when you're looking at what you want to grow is to have a bit of a plan. This is a constant theme in everything we talk about. But to have a plan so that you know what plants complement each other and what seeds are going to grow better in what kind of soil. And so you might start with a soil test, which is easy enough to do. You can actually buy a little simple soil test to look at what they call the pH level of the soil, because you need to have kind of a medium pH in order to grow most things well. Some things need more acidity, some things need less. You also need to consider that some plants are going to do what they call cross-pollinate. So, for example, if you grow squash and cucumbers fairly close to each other, the birds and the bees are going to transfer some of that pollen to the cucumber and the cucumber to the squash, and you might end up with something that tastes a little wild.
But isn't this how we got all varieties of
it is some of it. So mm-hmm. It's just good to know that those things can happen. So the other issue is, what is it we want to eat? So, you know, in Ohio and Midwestern states, we tend to grow things like tomatoes and peppers and strawberries and those kind of things that everybody can't wait for to be ripe in the spring and summer. But a lot of things come from really far away, and that's part of the challenge. So saving seeds helps us to create our own garden, we can grow things in pots, we can grow things in the ground, we can grow things hydroponically with water as a source. But the point is, we can grow them, and that's what's the vital thing. So, for example, in seed saving, once we were growing that plant, at some point, at different stages, that plant has a DNA in it that says it's going to keep living. So that might be a biennial or a perennial, or it's time to die. And as soon as the plant signals that, it's going to send out the ability to grow seeds. And those seeds are what we're going to talk about next.
Okay, well, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, reminding you it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
Thank God. And apparently once you start setting seeds, it's the end of your world as well, because you're saying in a lot of plants, as soon as they are in the process of dying, they begin creating the next generation.
Yes, they do.
Well, I know you're talking here, you know, the act of revolution, saving seeds. And apparently on larger scales, there's clearly a mindset, at least in some people, that saving seeds is important. We've seen this vast die-off of species as agribusiness has taken over food production, and we've begun to see a lot in climate change and, deforestation and all of these other impacts that we see has an accumulated effect on the biodiversity of the world. In fact, I found it interesting that 53% of the world's commercial seed market is controlled just by the three companies you had mentioned earlier. Everybody's favorite, Monsanto, DuPont, and Syngenta.
Sin. There we go.
Sin in that name.
Telling its tale.
Since they've taken over, basically monopolizing the seed industry, seed prices have tripled, which, surprise, surprise, surprise. So, but there have been some efforts. The specific one, the Svalbard Global Seed Vault. I hope I said Svalbard right. My Norwegian heritage is showing, but that's located in Norway.
There are seed banks all over the world. And yeah. One of the things that's happened in some of the issues in the Middle East particularly, and other places too, is that the minute that a government wants to take over another government, one of the first things they do is blow up the seed banks. And then that destroys the heritage of the seed, all the generations of seed.
And the ability to feed themselves.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, speaking of Svalbard, the Norwegian, that was a case of Syria just recently, in the Syrian civil war. Many species were wiped out when they destroyed the seed banks of Syria during that. And fortunately, they had placed on deposit in Norway. So they've withdrawn some of those seeds to try and reestablish those back. But this particular one, there are more than 100 or more than a million samples stored up there.
Think of that. But we're only eating 10 varieties of food. So,
right.
So Mr. Positive today,
Mr.
which
Positive.
You are not.
Okay.
I want to talk.
Well, if you're not negative, you're not paying attention, folks.
Well,
that's all
yeah,
there is
okay.
to it.
Well, we get it that seed saving is a revolutionary thing, and there are a lot of reasons that motivate us. And I'm going to talk about some that are a lot more positive than the fact that they're going to destroy us. The exciting thing about seeds is it's super easy to save them. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of ways. There are dry ways and wet ways to save seeds. So each plant's a little bit different, but dry plants, we can go out and say, for example, I've got a good example here. I have some kale that went through the winter, which is not easy to do in the Midwest. And so we ate kale in the fall, and then it sat there and didn't do anything over the winter. It looked like it's dead. And then in the spring, it started to come back when there were more hours of light during the day. And now it set its seed. So I want to keep that seed. That seed is winter hardy, which means that plant's going to more than likely, when I sow those seeds, are going to live through the winter. So I like to plant greens in the fall, and we have those until maybe Christmas time. And then some of them die, some of them don't, and then they come back like gangbusters in March. Those seeds are dry seeds, so we can just go out and pick those pods and open the pods and dry them on either a screen or some paper towel or something, and then put them in an envelope or a jar once we're sure they're super dry so there's no mold or anything, and then we can save those until we need them.
Well, to interrupt you there, when you're saving these seeds, you know, all of the commercial seed banks I see, they seem to keep them like frozen or very close to frozen. Is that something you have to do, or just keep them from getting moisture?
You don't have to. You want it to be dry. So a paper bag, you also want to keep varmints out. So mice like to eat seeds, and you don't want that to happen. Yeah, if you have the ability to freeze the seeds, I guess that's fine. Most people don't have that ability, so it's just much better to say, let's dry them. Or some things like potatoes, carrots. Potatoes are virtually seed in that they're tubers, and when you get ready to grow potatoes, you cut the potato so that it has two what they call eyes in it. And then one is for the stem to come up through the ground, and the other is to grow roots.
Yeah, there was that old book, Grandma, Don't Bend Over in the Garden, because you know them taters got eyes. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Whatever.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I'll move on from there. Anyway, so the other thing is the wet method. So this is a fun way to save seeds too. So let's say you have an avocado, or you have a persimmon, and you want to, or a pawpaw, and you want to save the seeds. So these are wet seeds in that you're going to cut the fruit open or the vegetable open, and you're going to take that seed out, and you're going to keep it. Now, if in the case of pawpaws or persimmons, you really need to keep that seed kind of moist. So I usually put them in a jar in the fridge until I'm ready to use them, because once they start to dry out, they won't propagate. And avocado, I think it'll do its thing whenever.
Aren't there some seeds where you actually have to, like get them cold for a period of time or they won't germinate?
Yes, some of them require between 4 and 6 weeks to germinate. Mm-hmm. Some seeds required what they call scoring. So you have to wound like castor bean or sometimes nasturtium. You need to wound that seed so that you create a place for the seed to germinate from. So seeds are cool. They're all a little bit different, and I don't want to make it sound like it's a difficult thing, because it's not. It's not difficult to save seeds or germinate seeds. So, for example, if you save some seeds and you've had them for a while, you're unsure if they're what they call viable. That means are they going to send out a shoot? Are they going to actually do something besides just lay there and look at you? So what I like to do is to take the seeds and so let's say I have a package of seeds and seeds are getting more and more expensive and there are fewer and fewer seeds in the package. And we'll talk about that in a minute. But so let's say I want to know, I got a package of 50 seeds. So I want to know, are those seeds viable? I don't want to waste my time and effort and my resources by just sticking them in the ground or in little pots or whatever. So I'm going to take, say, 5 of those seeds, and I'm going to get them good and wet, maybe soak them overnight. I'm going to put them in some wetted paper towel and roll them up. And in a couple days, I'll come back, and they should have started to swell and send out something. And maybe I wait a few more days, but that's going to tell me, it's going to give me a percentage of how many seeds are likely to sprout and grow or be viable, as I said. And then I'm going to know, do I want to try to sow those seeds and grow them, or do I chuck that and move on to the next lot?
Well, I can guarantee if I touch the seed packet, they are no longer viable.
Yeah.
Because they're going to die.
Yeah. So mm-hmm. when you want to save seeds, as I said, some seeds are going to need to be dry. Some seeds you're going to need to keep in the refrigerator and not let dry out. But the other thing is you're going to want to mark those seeds so you know what is it. So, for example,
Mark the seed packet?
Yeah, the packet.
Not the seed
itself.
I could see
that
doing little scoring on a tomato seed.
Yeah, yeah. So let's say I like to grow Cherokee black tomatoes, and I love them. They're so delicious, and they're an ancient brand of seed or type of seed. So I'm going to write tomato, and then I'm going to write Cherokee black, and then I'm going to put the date that I put that seed in the packet. And I have a big Rubbermaid bin that I keep my seeds in, and I keep them in glass jars once I'm sure they're good and dry. And I save lots and lots of seeds. I save all kinds of flower seeds, all kinds of vegetable seeds. And people bring me seeds all the time. They're beautiful. They're like jewelry. They're all different. And eventually get to know when you see a seed exactly what it is. You might not know its exact brand. Like, I don't know it's Cherokee Black, but I know it's a tomato seed. So what are some of the reasons that we would want to save seeds besides the fact that it's a fantastic
thing? Well, before you get to that, because you promised to tell me how come these things cost so much now.
Okay.
Because it used to be like seeds were like almost free. You go down,
They used to give them away.
Yeah, they'd be like whole racks of them, 19 cents for whatever they were just as cheap as chicken feed, which is not cheap anymore.
In the early 1900s, the government decided they were going to encourage people, and the seed companies were going to encourage people to grow their own gardens in cities. So they gave away millions of seed packets, and people started producing vegetables and fruits. And it occurred to the seed companies, wait a minute. If we keep doing this, we're basically going to be out of business. So we're going to – that's when the whole thing of heirloom versus hybrid seeds started to happen, because they realized if they made the seeds hybrid and changed the DNA, then you couldn't get the true plant back, so you'd have to buy seed the next year to do it.
And I think I read somewhere where the very first lobbyist was for the
seed companies.
Yeah, yes. Trying to stop the government from
giving away seeds. Yes. So part of the reason I think seeds are expensive is that there's a lot of testing required. So people have, I would say about 5 or 6 years ago, there was a big push again for local people and local farm situation to get people to try to grow things on their lots in town and grow more food to feed themselves because it's a healthier thing to do. And libraries created some seed banks because lots of people have seeds, so you could bring seeds to them in little packets. And the government came in and said, wait a minute, have those seeds all been tested? We don't know. You might be cheating people. Well, for heaven's sake, they're giving them away. Mm-hmm. And they stopped them from doing it because they would fine them with a financial fine if they gave the seeds away. So they did away with these little local seed banks. Now, people do exchange seeds still in small communities, but it's like an active revolution. Like you can sell a gun easier than you can legally trade seeds. So that understood, that's why the cost of seeds.
Seeds don't kill people. Plants kill people.
Okay, well, depends on which ones. If you eat the right ones, they will kill you.
Right. You can take my seeds when you pry them from my cold, dead hand.
That's it, yeah. So we have to think about this in terms of if every seed has to be tested to be true, that really adds to the cost of seeds. There are several seed companies that I like to patronize because I feel like they are resisting these changes the government is trying to push. And so Baker Seed Company is one, Johnny Shep's. There are a lot of them
is
out
the
there.
The Baker Seed one, the one with the pretty catalog?
Oh, man, that catalog is so, it's like a picture book for the coffee table. So these are companies, and there are lots more out there. Seed Savers. Not only do Seed Savers have seeds, but they also collect seeds from people, and they have a network where you can register to say that you have certain kinds of seeds and how to exchange them or to sell them and things like that. So there's revolution out there happening, and there's organizing happening. So why do we save seeds? Well, first of all, it does save money. It also preserves the seeds for future generations. It preserves genetic diversity because lots of these seeds are being changed by corporations. And if we can get them in the hands of more gardeners, we have more likelihood of hanging on to them. The flavor is so fantastic in heirloom seeds, things that we grow. It's a connection to your land and your own garden or your own pots of things. It's helpful to the pollinators because not just honeybees, but many, many pollinators. 80% of what we grow has to be pollinated by some kinds of bugs. And then it builds community because gardeners love to talk to each other, whether it's two pots on the balcony or a big piece of ground that you've rented in an allotment in your community where you share with other gardeners.
Or more importantly, it's a way to stick it to Monsanto.
No, I don't think we can think
okay,
like that.
I'll think that way.
I think we have to say.
You can think positively.
It's not just positively. It's saying I'm living sustainably and I have control over my life in at least this one area and I'm doing a good thing for the world.
Okay, well, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke. We'd like to thank our Emmy-winning producer, Adam Rich, and we'd like to thank you for just spending a wee little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully probably told you, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is, Annie?
Play nice with others, clean up your own mess, and my grandma said, eat those delicious green beans.
Okay, till next time.
Mother Earth will sing, and her children will be healed.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com.